Good evening and welcome to City Visions. I'm guest host Raja Shah, sitting in for Joseph Pache. On tonight's show, we ask, what is an appropriate parental leave policy? Netflix recently announced that it's offering paid parental leave for up to a year. It sparked a conversation about our entire culture's approach to work, what role government should play in promoting family-friendly policies, and gender parity at both work and home. Will other companies follow suit? Can they afford to? Is a generous parental leave policy fair to non-parents? Joining me here in the KALW studio to discuss these issues and more are Julia Parrish, a staff attorney at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center and the director of the Healthy Mothers Workplace Coalition. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you.
We also have Tom Stocky. He's a vice president for search at Facebook. Tom has taken parental leave twice at Facebook, and he wrote a web post about his first experience on leave that went viral. I should also mention, Tom is a friend of mine. Several years ago, he and I were colleagues in the tech industry, and though we've taken very different paths since then, he's an executive at Facebook, and I am your humble public radio reporter. We've still managed to remain friends. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Yeah, great to be here.
And on the phone, we're very lucky to have Joan C. Williams. She's a distinguished professor of law and Hastings Foundation chair at UC Hastings. She's also written 6 books about workplace bias and work-family conflict. Most recently, What Works for Women at Work. She's a founding director of the Center for Work-Life Law, and she's also been described by the New York Times as having something approaching rock star status in this field. Joan, thank you for taking time out of your rock star life to join us.
Me and Mick Jagger. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you for being here. And about 20 minutes after the hour, we'll open up the phone lines, invite you, our listeners, to join our conversation by dialing 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. Or you can text us or email us now at cityvisions@kalw.org. Or you can post a comment on kalw.org or on our Facebook page. You can also tweet us at cityvisionskalw. We want to know, what do you think an appropriate family leave policy is? Would you take a full year of leave? What have you experienced navigating these issues at work and at home? But first, I want to lay the groundwork on Julia Parrish. I was trying to understand beforehand all of the sort of rights that an ordinary person in this country has when it comes to parental leave. And I ran into an alphabet soup of acronyms. I think there's the FMLA, the ADA, CFRA, CPFL, PDL. I think I'm missing some, but...
You got a lot of those. I'm impressed. Yeah, you're not alone. It's very confusing. There are 2 kinds of laws that typically apply to workers who are parents. One set protects the worker's job while they're missing work and allows them to return and provides for unpaid leave. And then there are some additional laws that offer wage replacement programs for parents who are bonding with new children. At a federal level, we have the FMLA, the Family and Medical Leave Act, which provides for 12 weeks of unpaid but job-protected leave for eligible workers to bond with a new child. It's important to note that there are strict eligibility requirements for the FMLA. Worker has to have been with their employer for at least a year, has to have worked at least 1,250 hours in the year preceding their leave, and their employer has to have at least 50 employees. And those eligibility requirements actually exclude about 40% of the workforce.
And so even just to get the unpaid leave, only 60% even qualify for that.
That's right, at a federal level. And there's no federal paid program that is available to workers at all. At a state level, we have the California Family Rights Act, which is very similar to the FMLA and provides unpaid job-protected time off, but it has the same eligibility requirements. So the same number of workers are going to be excluded. What California does have is a paid family leave program, which is a wage replacement program that is funded actually entirely by employees through paycheck deductions. Employers don't pay into this fund, but if an employee has paid this tax, then they are eligible to receive up to 6 weeks of partial wage replacement while they're bonding with a new child.
So the idea is for most non-Californians, if you're just U.S. citizen but you don't happen to be in California, then you get 12 weeks unpaid. And even then, only if you're in the 60% of people who qualify. Is that right?
That's right.
If you're in the other 40%, then what's your deal?
You're not entitled to even a single day when you become a parent for for parental leave. And we actually hear from a lot of workers, particularly low-wage workers, who can't take any time off when they have a new child, which can be very difficult. There are some laws that can protect a pregnant woman's job if she's recovering from childbirth and remains disabled, but those are really disability-based laws instead of parental leave laws. And they only last for as long as you're actually disabled by your childbirth.
And so then it sounds like in California, we are kind of unusual in that we do have a state law that provides some paid family leave?
Yeah, we were the very first in the nation to have any paid leave program at all. And since then, a handful of other states have followed suit, but not very many. There is a bill pending that has been introduced at the federal level called the Family Act that would create a very similar program, but that hasn't moved very far federally.
And just to keep track, so 12 weeks unpaid at the federal level. California, there's some paid leave, but how much paid leave?
6 weeks.
And is that 100% paid?
It's at 55%, and there is a cap. So very high wage earners will not get a full 55% of their pay.
Is that for fathers and mothers?
Yes, both parents, domestic partners, same-sex spouses.
Interesting. All right. So we've been hearing about what the situation is like here in the United States. Joan Williams, professor at Hastings, I wonder if you could tell us more about how does the situation here in the U.S. compare with other countries around the world?
I regularly have people who were born in Europe calling me up and going, is this really what you get in the United States? And I say, yes, we have the most family-hostile public policy in the entire industrialized world. We have for many people no paid leave, as you've heard. We have very, very few child care subsidies, which is not the case in most of the rest of the industrialized world. We have virtually no limits on working hours, which exist in much of the rest of the industrialized world. And in addition, we don't have basic time off benefits like paid vacation, which most of the rest of the industrialized world does. So we are alongside countries like Papua New Guinea in terms of the level of family-friendly supports that we offer.
Papua New Guinea, you know, I was looking into this, and that's the name that came up. I think I saw a stat that there's only three countries in the entire world, not just amongst rich industrialized countries, only three countries in the entire world that don't have any paid maternity leave. And one was the one you mentioned, Papua New Guinea. The other was Swaziland, and then the other was the United States.
Yep.
Is that true?
That is totally true. Not our usual cohort, and it's really stunning. And so, as Julia mentioned, people have been working on getting paid leave in the United States, but they've at a national level, but they've been working at it since about 1982. And the reason that we have such a out of sync legal regime when it comes to parents is really three different things that are different in the United States than they are in Europe and most other industrialized countries. First of all, we have unions that are much weaker than they are in most countries that have a good set of, what, as they call them, work-family reconciliation policies. Typically, unions have played a very big role in getting these, what are basically workers' rights. Secondly, in the United States, we have very negative attitudes towards government and government programs, and that's very different than exists in most of the rest of the world. And thirdly, in the United States, the idea of having a child is treated as sort of a private frolic, individual to the worker, similar to hang gliding. So if you're not going to pay for my hang gliding, I'm not going to pay for your child. Whereas in Japan and Europe, they really see these work-family reconciliation policies as, number one, good for the economy to get women into the workforce, but also, number two, as producing the next generation of citizens. So those three things mean that we have a very hostile climate in the United States.
All right, and I think we're going to come back to some of those questions a little bit later in the hour. But first, I want to get to our next guest, Tom Stocky. And actually, you know, it's related to what we've been talking about, because as Julia and Joan Williams pointed out, in the United States, we don't really have much in the way of federally guaranteed rights for parents. We have some, but they pale in comparison to the rest of the world. And so it sounds like what happens is we primarily rely on the private sector, as we've done in other areas like healthcare. And that can be hit or miss. It really just depends on who you work for. Some companies are more generous with their leave policies than others. One company that's very generous with its leave policies is Facebook. And Tom Stocky, you are a vice president for search at Facebook. I wonder if you could actually just first lay out, what is the parental leave policy at Facebook?
Yeah, so Facebook gives both mothers and fathers four months of paid leave, and they actually encourage them to take it.
4 months, and that's for both mothers and fathers.
That's right.
You know, you took advantage of this leave a couple of years ago after the birth of your first child, and you decided to write a post about it on Facebook. And then things changed for you somewhat. What happened?
Well, originally I wrote that post and just shared it with friends, and it was kind of just my observations about what it was like to be on parental leave. And most of the post was actually about the fact that I observed, kind of similar to how people talk about these nudges that nudge women away from the workplace, especially mothers, I kind of observed similar nudges for fathers away from the home. And so I talked about some of those in the post, you know, kind of strange looks I would get sometimes when I was on the playground during the day, and the fact that whenever I went to join a parent group, it was always called a mommy group, and some of these other things. But then it also, I think a lot of people just noticed that, like, whoa, this guy, like, went on a four-month leave, and that in itself was kind of unusual. And so someone, one of my friends in the comments was like, why are you only sharing this with friends? Like, why not make this public? And I did that. And I had no expectation that it was going to get the attention it did. But yeah, a lot of people, it seemed like it really resonated with them.
It got 10,000 likes on Facebook, the all-important measure of importance. It was shared 6,000 times. And yeah, it really struck a chord. Why do you think that is?
This is kind of a hot topic lately. You know, the way I think about it is... It's like we talk a lot about kind of gender equality in the workplace. And one part of that gets overlooked is gender equality in the home. And I think the two of these have to go hand in hand. And so a lot of, I think, the things that I talked about were how it's a little bit hard for fathers to take time off. There's perhaps even more pressure on them that they should be spending that time at work.
Yeah, you know, just to back up, in case people haven't read it, well, first of all, you can Google Tom Stocky, and I think it's the second result. Or we can put a link on our webpage or our Facebook page. But, the way I would describe it is it's a meditation on fatherhood, but it also gets into your encounters with the low expectations for fathers in our society. And you called out three points in particular. One is that you encountered low expectations for you as a dad when you were out with your daughter at the supermarket or anywhere else, getting praise for changing a diaper. You also noticed that there were negative perceptions of working mothers. And I think one of the backhanded compliments you mentioned was someone telling you, your wife must work so hard. That's great that you're able to pick up the slack. I think that qualifies as a backhanded compliment. And then the last one, which I think is my favorite / most cringeworthy, is you mentioned that you picked up on negative perceptions of non-working fathers. And someone said to you, it's too bad you can't earn as much as your wife so she can be the one to stay home. Did somebody really say that to you?
Yeah, that happened in the grocery store.
And, oh my gosh. Well, one thing that I've been learning more about is that these kinds of anecdotes that you experienced as a father taking his paternity leave, they are actual concepts that have been researched and studied. And Joan Williams, I wonder if you could weigh in on Tom's experience. You've read the post. What do you make of his experience? Joan, are you there? Well, I wonder, Julia, would you like to weigh in?
Sure. I think you have hit, you've clearly pulled people's heartstrings, right, with your post that got so many likes and so many shares, because this is something that a lot of people are experiencing every day in their lives, right? And one thing that a lot of the research shows is that particularly fathers who take paternity leave or parental leave are more engaged in caregiving not only during that period of time, but throughout a child's whole entire life. And so it's really important, I think, for exactly those concepts of gender equity in the workplace and elsewhere, that we have a rounded society that can support people who are doing these things. And our mode of thinking is way behind, because there's a lot of research that either women are stigmatized when they do things like seek flexibility in the workforce so that they can continue to meet their caregiving obligations, and yet men are rewarded when they do the same kind of things. And so I think we have a long way to go to catch up to people's, or get people's mindsets in the place where it's totally normal that both parents would do this, and of course they would do that.
How do those stigmas actually manifest themselves in the workplace?
I think in a couple of ways. I think either people feel like they have to choose between taking a parental leave and their career trajectory and the long-term financial security of their family. And that's a really difficult choice that no one should have to make. But a lot of people, for example, in California's paid family leave program, there have been some studies about why people utilize the leave and why they don't. And for people who have qualifying reasons to take paid family leave, most of them don't take the leave because they fear negative consequences at work. So even people who have access to it still aren't doing it. And that's why it's so important to have an example like Tom, who is somebody who's going to actually take advantage of that policy and show that it's not only important to have the policies, but that it's okay for parents to use them. And it's good for the company in the long run.
Tom, I was going to ask you about that. What impact did it have at work? You wrote that post at the end of your paternity leave, and so you speculated within it about what it was going to be like to go back, and on a variety of fronts, you know, how it might impact your career. But before we get to that, I'm curious, has it, this was 2 years ago, has it had an impact on whether other men at the company are willing to take the full 4 months that's offered to them?
It seems like it has. I end up, a lot of the fathers or about to be fathers reach out to me, and so we'll have lunch or coffee or just go on walks or something. And so it's been one of these things where I've gotten a little window into a lot of like the questions they have and the fears they have. And the advice I generally give them is like, look, it's really important to kind of like plan your kind of exit strategy and also, you know, what's going to happen to your role while you're away. But then it's also really important to plan your re-entry strategy. Because it's really important to like set expectations with everyone about like what's going to happen when you get back, and like you're going to take on your role again, or maybe things will shift, but whatever. But have that plan up front, and that was something that I didn't do when I was away, and things turned out fine. Like, I mean, this had no negative repercussions for my career at all. But it was one of the things that like I learned from it, which was like that uneasiness that I experienced is something that is manageable in advance.
You mentioned that people would come to you with questions after you wrote that post. What kinds of questions do they have for you?
I think the main thing is like, just how do I make this work? And what's really funny is the first question almost everyone asks is like, how do I decide when to take my leave? And it's like, they want to try to like work their leave into their job, or like pick a good time around like, you know, when there's not a lot of work to be done or something. And the first thing I always tell them is like, well, talk to your family, decide on when the right time to take the leave is for your family, and then design a plan for how you can adjust your work schedule and everything around that. Because this benefit is ultimately about, you know, doing something that's really good for your family. So don't try to like work it in, you know, between meetings or something.
Interesting. We've got Joan Williams back on the line. Joan, I wonder, you know, Julia talked about the stigma attached to mothers at work Yeah, basically that. But Tom has also been talking about the negative perceptions of men who are staying at home, whether it's because of paternity leave or otherwise. Can you talk a little bit about what the research has shown in that regard? Joan, do we have you there? Sounds like we're still having some trouble with the line. Well, you know, I wanted to ask another question about your experiences at Facebook, Tom, which is, you mentioned that there wasn't any backlash that you suffered as a result of taking this full paternity leave, which is great to hear. But I, you know, as we know, a lot of these tech companies are very data-driven. They measure everything. Everything is done for a reason. I'm curious if you could talk a little bit about how that policy came to be in the first place in terms of offering such a generous leave policy.
So the policy predates me. I actually don't know the decision-making process behind it, but I can tell you how we think about like the benefits to having the leave and continuing to have that policy now. I mean, the first is like, you know, Julia mentioned some of the research here, but you know, having dads play spend that time and play a role early on in the child's life means they tend to be more involved later, and I think it even has some like health benefits to the kids. So that's like on the good for family side. But even if you assumed companies didn't care at all about that and we're just, you know, thinking about this from the company's perspective, there's still some benefits there. So we find that there is some benefit in hiring. Like people who are deciding which company to join, they look at the whole benefits package, and this is one component. And especially if someone's thinking about becoming a parent in the near future, they might choose to join Facebook because of that. And the other thing is it helps with retention. Because, you know, if your best performers might be thinking about like, oh, well, what do I do now that I'm thinking about having a kid? You know, maybe I should find a place that has a more attractive, you know, parental leave or something, or maybe I should take some extended time off on my own. And so this tends to be something that actually helps with retention. And I think the third thing is that we generally find, you know, that if you invest in employees' time away from work, you know, in their lives, and you help them, you know, be happy and live fulfilling lives, that they tend to bring that into the workplace, and they tend to be happy and more productive while they're at the workplace. So it helps in terms of ROI from that perspective, too.
Thank you for that, Tom Stocky. Let's take a quick break, give out the phone number so that we can get our callers in on the conversation. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio 91.7, KALW San Francisco, and on the web at KALW.org. Tonight, we're discussing what an appropriate family leave policy is with our guests, Joan C. Williams, Distinguished Professor of Law at UC Hastings, Julia Parrish, Staff Attorney at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, and Tom Stocky, Vice President of Search at Facebook. We ask you to call in with your questions or comments. We want to know, what kind of leave policy does your employer offer? Have you ever taken parental leave? Why? Why not? And what would you consider an ideal parental leave policy? Should parents be entitled to 1 year of paid leave, as we've heard about as being offered at Netflix now? Would that kind of policy be realistic at your workplace? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And there's other ways you can reach us, too. You can text us or email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on our website, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at cityvisionskalw. I want to get back to the conversation about, and it sounds like we do have Joan Williams back on the line. Joan, are you there?
Yes, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Okay, I've been talking and you haven't been able to hear me.
Welcome. It's great to have you. I actually wonder if you wanted to weigh in on any of the comments that Tom or Julia were just making. Tom had been describing his experience at Facebook taking paternity leave, which he documented in that web post.
Yeah, this is what we call the flexibility stigma. And we organized a working group about 5 years ago to document it because we'd heard about it from a lot of people. And there are actually three studies now. Two of the studies show that men who take leave or adopt flexible schedules often do get dinged at work because they're seen as too feminine. This is gender discrimination. And the third actually involved blue-collar guys who weren't taking leave or asking for a flexible schedule. They were just disclosing on the job that they had caregiving responsibilities. And they also got dinged on the job. They suffered from a lot of workplace harassment. And so I think one of the things that Tom's experience suggests is that and he really said it very well, there's a lot of pressures that sort of police women out of breadwinning roles, and they police men into breadwinning roles. So men are urged not to engage in caregiving, and women are urged not to engage in breadwinning. And I think that explains a lot of Tom's experience.
Thanks for that, Joan Williams, professor at UC Hastings. Tom, do you have anything to say about that? You know, what we just heard from Joan Williams is that there's a stigma associated. It sounds like you didn't really experience that at all, or was there some that you got?
Well, I don't think I experienced it at work. A lot of what I, in terms of when I talk to fathers at work, what they tell me is they have this kind of pressure on both sides. So when they're at home, they kind of feel guilty that, you know, they're not spending enough time doing work. And when they're at work, they also feel guilty about not spending enough time at home. I think this is actually a pressure that all parents feel. But it does seem like the expectations outside of work, I mean, at Facebook, it's actually been pretty great. But outside of work, I think there is a different set of expectations, you know, that Joan was just alluding to.
You know,
the thing that's really dramatic about Facebook is they've really made an effort to message consistently from the top that men are and women, but especially men, are expected to take parental leave. So that flexibility stigma that I've talked about, they have really attempted very actively to counter. And I think the Facebook example shows that we need more companies that take that kind of position consistently from leadership on down through the companies. But what Tom's experience suggests is that that stigma stems from many, many different places. He felt it in the grocery store. He felt it on the playground. And so this is very pervasive in our culture.
It is. And so even if Facebook as a company may be an outlier in that regard, you know, there's been a lot of talk in the news about other workplaces. For example, there was that big piece in the New York Times a couple of weekends ago about Amazon and the workplace culture there that has been on a lot of people's minds. And I should say that Jeff Bezos, you know, has come back and said that that's not the workplace, that the Amazon that he recognizes. But nonetheless, those claims stand. And there's been a lot of follow-ups to that article, another one in the New York Times, actually, about the idea that that situation at Amazon was really not an exception, but rather part of a broader trend towards longer hours, more competitive workplaces, whether it's in law firms, management consulting, on Wall Street. And one of those articles actually cited a report by Joan Williams. I wonder if you could talk about that, Joan.
Well, the report made some really pretty dramatic findings. It was about lawyers, and it showed that because many lawyers, men as well as women, felt they hadn't found the work-life balance that they wanted at large law firms, what they're doing in droves is leaving large law firms and founding their own firms that hard-bake work-life balance into the business model. And some of these firms are small, but some of these firms are large. We talked to a firm with a $50 million capitalization that claims to serve one-third of the Fortune 100 companies. Another is Axiom, which claims to serve half of the Fortune 100 companies. And so I think the sobering message for companies that really don't attempt to struggle with these issues or don't do so successfully, at where the flexibility stigma remains very strong for people who take leave or want a flexible schedule, is you kind of better watch out because people may leave your firm and go found a competitor. That's what's happening in the law.
Can you tell us more about those firms that are making those flexible schedules work? What do they actually do?
Well, it's really fascinating because there are two very different types of flexible schedules that are being delivered by these companies. One of them is a short part-time schedule that's worked chiefly by women who would self-identify as stay-at-home moms, and also, interestingly enough, different drummer men, including a lot of Nashville musicians. So these people want 10 to 20-hour week schedules that they can work at home and choose not to work any week when it's not convenient. The other schedule that people are seeking is what I call full-time flex. It's a 40 to 50-hour a week schedule that's worked from home, completely flexible hours, where people can depend on being home for dinner and actually taking their vacations. And this full-time flex schedule is wanted by a whole ton of men, many of them founding these companies, and also large numbers of women want that kind of schedule.
You mentioned these flexible schedules. I wonder, it sounds like it's working for some of those firms. Is that the kind of thing that could be applied to some of these other law firms that we hear so much about as having a sort of cutthroat competitive culture and extremely long hours?
Well, I mean, I think these new companies, I call them new models of legal practice, and there's four quite different kinds of companies. they're led by competitive people too. I mean, they're led by entrepreneurs who are going out and founding companies that grow to large companies. So these are not sort of lily-livered people who lack a competitive ethic. These are people who feel passionately and are building businesses, some small, some very large. But the point is, one of their competitive goals is not only to deliver excellence and excellent product, but to deliver work-life balance for themselves and those who work for them. So it's just it's not a matter of whether you're competitive or not. It's a matter of what your goals are.
And this kind of brings us back to a point that Tom was making earlier. I think the way you said it is that we can't have gender equality in the workplace until we have it at home. The implication being that unless there's actually parental leave policies, as an example, that support fathers taking just as much time off as mothers, then it will be unrealistic to expect norms to change in the workplace as well. Did I get that right?
Yeah, I think that's right. And that's part of the reason why I think we've done a number of things at Facebook to encourage people to actually take the leave, because it's not enough to just have it. You need to actually have people take it. I mean, one of the things we do is, and part of the reason why I take it and talk about it is because you need leaders in the company setting that example. But the other thing we do is also we train our managers to when their employee discloses that, you know, they're going to have a kid, we tell them, say, okay, well, let's talk through your plan for what your leave's going to be, with that kind of implicit assumption that they're going to take the leave and take all of it, as opposed to saying, like, oh, are you going to take leave? How much? You know, that sends a very different message, even like the subtlety of the language you use in the question.
I want to take a quick break. This is City Visions on Local Public Radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing what an appropriate family leave policy is with our guests, Joan C. Williams, Distinguished Professor of Law at UC Hastings, Julia Parrish, staff attorney at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, and Tom Stocky, Vice President of Search at Facebook. And we invite you to call in with your questions, comments. We want to know what kind of experiences you've had taking parental leave. Did you get enough? Did your employer provide a generous leave policy like the one at Facebook? Or did you have to go right back to work the next day or 2 weeks later? And also, what would be an ideal parental leave policy in your mind? The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And there's other ways you can reach us, too. You can text us, email us at cityvisions@klw.org, post a comment on our website, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at cityvisionsKALW. Tom Stocky, I want to come back to a point you were making about the fact that Facebook encourages its employees to take this advantage of this leave, and that's something that maybe needs to happen because of things like the flexibility stigma that Joan Williams was talking about earlier. You know, we started this conversation talking about Netflix and their new policy to offer mothers and fathers, I believe, 1 year off or up to 1 year off of unlimited amount of time within that first year. And a lot of people, well, I'll stop right there. I wonder, Julia Parrish, what did you make of that announcement?
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty exciting. I think it's definitely a goal we need to be moving towards, giving all parents more access to paid leave. One thing I think that that Joan and Tom have really brought up is that a lot of companies are doing this, and Netflix said that this was part of their motivation in order to attract and retain talent, or they're unhappy at their large law firm, and so they're going to form their own law firm and become a competitor. And I think that is important that many companies are realizing that this is good for their business, and it's good for their employees and their bottom line, and making these policies part of their business models and being an example. But, you know, at the same time, only 13% of all workers nationally have any access to paid time off from their employer at all. And so we're still really talking about the minority of employers that are offering these kinds of programs in any form. And so I think you said it earlier, it's really hit or miss. And I think a worker shouldn't have to kind of you know, win the employer lottery to have access to some parental leave when they really need it. And so a lot of these policies, while I think they're very important, they're great steps forward, we have to keep in mind that there are, you know, lots and lots of workers, the vast majority of workers, who don't have any access to these things at all. And we really need to push public policy forward at the same time that we look to these industry leaders for what they're doing, for ideas, make sure that we're bringing public policy along with them so that we can make sure that everyone has access to these basic civil rights.
I want to get into some of those policy questions in a little bit, but first I want to pick up on something you said about the fact that these policies are hit or miss. And at Netflix, even the policy is hit or miss in that it's come out that only employees in the streaming department at Netflix will have access to this leave. The older DVD by mail business, presumably an older part of the business, employees there as well as customer service reps won't have access to the leave. Joan Williams, I'm curious what you thought when you saw that announcement by Netflix.
Well, I mean, I think if you're not going to have public policy, and unfortunately we don't in the United States, it's what large businesses are going to do is to offer these policies to high human capital workers. And that's not ideal. That's why we need public policy. I think there are other issues, though. If you're going to, for the companies who do offer these leaves, what is a better design of the policy? For example, is a four-month leave that men as well as women are encouraged to take a better way to design these kinds of corporate policies than a one-year unlimited leave, leaving it up to people how much leave they take? And I think that in high tech, where the ideal worker typically is defined as informally but very powerfully as someone who's always available to work and who is extremely focused on work, perhaps much more so than family responsibilities, the better design is the way Facebook has designed their policy, especially combined with robust encouragement to the men to actually take the leave, which is what's going on at Facebook. In terms of the background research on the flexibility stigma, the fear is that if you have an unlimited leave that doesn't set any expectations as to how much your leave you're supposed to take, in the United States, when workers don't even take the amount of vacation they're entitled to because of these strong messages about how to be an ideal worker is to be always available, the fear is that women won't take all they need, and the fear is that men might take even less. Depends on how it's implemented, but that's certainly the fear.
Yeah, that concern about the fact that Netflix has sort of left it open-ended, they say unlimited, it's in the hands of the employee to decide. As you point out, some have argued that that creates these perverse pressures on the employee to say, well, yeah, I'm going to take 7 months versus you're going to take 9 months, I'm going to take 2 months, and then it could potentially devolve into a competition to see who takes less. Whereas, as you pointed out, at Facebook, if it's a strict 4 months and everybody's encouraged to take the full amount and that's modeled, that might be a model that works better. But I wonder if this concern about Netflix's approach gets to some of the bigger issues we were touching on earlier about essentially, I guess, what you could call a culture of work in this country. I mentioned the Amazon article. Have you all read that?
Yeah.
It seemed to make the rounds. I wonder if there's a tension between the general trend in our society in terms of both the focus on economic productivity, but also that culture of being at the desk, putting in long hours, and gender equality. If gender equality is dependent on healthier work-life balance for both men and women. Joan Williams, do you want to take that one?
I think there are really two strong trends. One is that the way we define the ideal worker in terms of work intensity and length of the schedule has gotten nothing but more and more intense and longer in the past 20 years. So that's one strong trend. The other strong trend is really represented by Tom, and that a younger generation of men that really sees being a good dad as being involved with the daily care of their children. And that's another strong trend. I mean, the fact that Tom is here talking about having taken his parental leave with the support of the managers and encouragement of people above him, really represents that other strong trend. And the message for companies who are not proactive in making substantial leaves available to these kinds of workers, the message is that they stand to lose not only the women, but they stand to lose the men, many men who, without these kinds of workplace flexibility, will leave these companies again and found competitors, and that just doesn't make economic sense.
Well, Tom Stocky, according to Joan Williams, you represent one, you're an example of a larger trend of men who want to spend more time with their families and fulfilling those responsibilities at home. But at the end of the day, you're also a vice president at Facebook. And so I would think that you're also caught up in that other trend, whether you like it or not, of, you know, Facebook is not known as a slouch when it comes to its success as a business. I wonder how that's played out for you. Do you feel that tension on a daily basis or monthly basis?
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned this before. I still am victim to the same guilt I think a lot of parents feel, which is whenever I'm at home, I always feel like, oh, maybe I should be plugged in or should be doing more at work, and vice versa. When I'm at work, I mean, one of the things is like, oh, I'm feeling guilty that I'm not spending that time with my kids. It is hard. The way I've addressed this is I've tried to set kind of hard rules for myself. And so one of the rules I have for myself, for example, is I leave at 5 every day. And that's because that's when the daycare I have to do pickups at closes at 5:30. So I kind of don't have an option. Like I have to, you know, get there in time to pick up my daughter. Without those rules, I think it might be harder because then it's like on a day-to-day basis, I'm making like, you know, small micro trade-offs.
I wonder if you found, is the culture of parenting more intense now than it used to be?
It could be. I mean, I certainly would, like, I think I wrote this in my post too, but the work I was doing at home was much harder than the work I do at Facebook. I would say it's sometimes, especially now with two kids and one who's very young, sometimes when I go into work, I'm like, ah, this is nice. It's kind of like a little bit of a vacation.
You mentioned, you know, you've had your second kid. Congratulations, by the way.
Thanks.
Are you going to take the full 4 months of parental leave offered by Facebook for this one?
Yes, I am. I have already made a plan, and I've communicated it to my team and to my manager. This was something that's important to me, and I tend to take the leave towards the end of the year. Because my wife takes her leave at the very beginning, and we want to maximize the amount of time that at least one of us is home.
I do want to come back to some of those culture of work questions, though. You know, we mentioned at Netflix the leave is unlimited, which creates some of those strange incentives, perhaps. But throughout the tech industry, these perks are prevalent, which seem like they are potentially both good for the worker, but also designed to keep people at the office. Facebook and Apple both have egg freezing as an option, and they've come under fire for those policies because although it seems like perhaps a generously minded perk and certainly an expensive one for them to provide, is there the idea that, well, the message they're sending to young women is why not delay starting a family so that you can spend more time at work?
Well, I think it's with all benefits, the way at least Facebook's approach is this, is to look around and say, okay, what are the sorts of things that a lot of employees would benefit from? And also, are there certain things that, you know, perhaps we can do at scale so that instead of each employee doing something for themselves, you know, we can do it in a way that costs less overall? And so in this sort of case, this was something that a lot of people were asking for, and so we decided to do it. I think you're right that there's a lot of these cases where you can kind of see a sinister side to it. And it's hard to say. I mean, certainly from our perspective, this was something that we were doing because a lot of employees asked for it.
Some companies are making it work. Facebook and Google are both known for having relatively generous parental leave policies. There's other companies like Apple and Amazon, which I think there was an article in, was it BuzzFeed just yesterday, that argued that those two companies, because they operate in lower margin businesses, perhaps, they're not quite known for quite the same work-life balance. And I want to come back to that question of, yes, there are companies, as Joan Williams pointed out, that are starting new ways of arranging the workday and scheduling for their employees. But there's still those other ones, which some of which we think of as the most innovative companies in the country and the world, which aren't necessarily at the forefront. And I do have to come back to the question, you know, Tesla with its cars, Apple, the iPhones that everybody seems to love, Amazon with its Kindle. Do we have to choose between those devices and a healthier work-life balance? Julia Parrish, do you want to?
I
think the answer is definitely not. And I think that it's a question of what sorts of things an employer is valuing in their cost analysis, right? And when they're deciding about these policies. And if you look solely at, you know, a black and white number of saying, I will have to pay this person some amount of money when he or she is not here for some limited period of time, and that's the only thing that you're considering, that's really a short-sighted view, because it doesn't take into account things like, you know, increased worker productivity or retention or turnover costs or the threat of having your very innovative tech competitor swoop in and steal your best employee, which I think is something that's very real and people deal with all the time. And as Joan mentioned earlier, you know, one of the trends is that employees are seeking employers that offer these policies. They want to be able to be there for their families and be the best employees that they can possibly be. And with all of these technological advances especially, it's more and more possible to do that, but it is important to put in these limitations and create these spaces where someone really can be a parent when they need to be a parent, and then they can be the employee that they need to be.
Joan Williams, do you want to weigh in?
Well, I mean, Julia said it very well. There's 25 years of research that shows that it's actually not good for a company's bottom line to short its workers on leave and workplace flexibility. Because, as Julia points out, that fuels very high churn and attrition. It can cost 150 of these high human capital workers' salaries to replace them when they leave. And you heard Tom said it. He's talking about feeling badly about when he's at work, that he's not at home, and badly when he's home, that he's not at work. That kind of guilt used to be called, we used to call that mommy guilt 20 years ago, but now men actually report higher levels of work-family conflict than women do. And so for many years, there's been documentation that it will cost employers a lot more if they don't implement these family-friendly policies than if they do, and that only counted the women. Now, employers are looking face-to-face with the fact that men now are where women were 30 years ago and are reporting sky-high levels of work-family conflict and willing to act on it. So the business case for implementing these family-friendly policies is very robust.
And I agree with Joan. I think the business case is definitely there, but as she points out, it's been there for a long time, and yet we still see these disparities, even among, you know, high human capital workers in elite tech companies. And we definitely still see it amongst vulnerable low-wage workers who are often seen as fungible. They're expendable and replaceable, even though there is a significant cost to having turnover in any industry for any level of worker. And so despite having this kind of evidence and these shifting trends and what workers are looking for, we have not gotten to the place where we can give what they need to them and to their families. And there are important other considerations as well. In addition to business cases and even the equity arguments, there are important health outcomes that Tom alluded to earlier. It's important for child cognitive development, as Joan was talking about. You know, other countries see this as developing its future citizens, right? And so increased paid leave and increased parental leave leads to longer duration of breastfeeding and higher percentage of initiation of breastfeeding. It leads to having more children go to preventative care visits and receiving their immunizations. It leads to decreased depression amongst new parents. And so there are really important documented health outcomes as well that are attached to these policies that are bigger than even the individual employer and employee.
Thank you, Julia Parrish. Let's take a quick break. This is City Visions on local public radio, 91.7 KALW San Francisco, and on the web at klw.org. Tonight, we're discussing what an appropriate family leave policy is with our guests, Joan C. Williams, Distinguished Professor of Law, UC Hastings, Julia Parrish, Staff Attorney at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, and Tom Stocky, a Vice President of Search at Facebook. And we invite you to call in. Let us know what kind of leave policy your employer offers, what your experiences have been with parental leave, good or bad, and what you think would be an ideal leave policy as we seek to improve those policies in this country. The number to call to join our conversation is 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. And you can also text or email us at cityvisions@kalw.org, post a comment on our website, or find us on Facebook or Twitter at cityvisionskalw. Julia Parrish, you were starting to talk about some of the work that you do at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center. That's a mouthful itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, it gets at the fact that up to this point, we've been talking about companies like Facebook, Netflix, Amazon, all white-collar companies that are doing all right and happen to provide relatively generous leave policies to their employees relative to the rest of the population. And it gets to a question of how class affects this debate. As I gather, your work at the LES ELC helps a lot of families navigate their options, many of whom who don't have access to the same kind of generous leave policy that we've been talking about. What do you see in your work? What kinds of families do you typically come across, and what are the issues that they're facing?
Yeah, so one of the things we do is we have a work and family helpline, which actually receives almost 2,000 calls a year from people who are really struggling with these very issues. And one of the most frequent questions we have is, I need to take time off to be with my family and care for my child, and my employer says I can't do that. And a lot of times the advice I have to give them is, that's really tragic, and I wish you could be there with your child, but you aren't covered by these laws that we talked about in the beginning of the segment. And so it's actually lawful for your employer to fire you in that situation. Or I have to say that, you know, they call and they even if they qualify for paid family leave benefits from the state of California, which they have paid for out of their paychecks, maybe 55% wage replacement is not enough to live on. When you have a new baby, you're buying a lot of diapers and all sorts of other things. And if you're a low-wage worker especially, you really need every penny to pay your rent and your, you know, gas bill. And so they can't take the time that they would otherwise be entitled to because the benefit isn't high enough. And so I think that that's one of the challenging parts for me is when somebody presents me with a situation where the law is just insufficient and that the only way to help them is either encourage their employer to adopt a better policy and provide that to all of their employees, which we try to do at the Employment Law Center by leading the Healthy Mothers Workplace Coalition, which basically gives awards to employers who are going above and beyond and have recognized the value of these policies and are implementing them for their employees as a way to incentivize and recognize those employers. And you can apply for an award now. You should check it out online. The other thing we do is policy work to try to fill some of these gaps and create a better baseline public policy for everyone. And right now there are actually two bills pending in California. One of them, AB 908, would increase the wage replacement rate for paid family leave up to 80% for low-wage workers, and then it would scale back down to 55% for higher-wage workers. And it would increase the duration of the benefit from 6 weeks to 10 weeks. And so that would allow people to take longer time and maybe give more meaningful access to time off for the most vulnerable workers. And the other bill is SB 406, which applies to the unpaid job protection law. Remember, there's two different kinds of laws, the wage replacement laws, which give people some access to pay, and then other laws which just tell employers they have to give people the time off, but the employer isn't required to pay them for that time. And SB 406 would lower the minimum employee threshold from 50 employees, where it currently is, down to 25, and that would capture a lot more employees and make them eligible for that time off.
So that more than the right now, only 60% actually qualify because of those eligibility rules, and so this would expand the number of people who are eligible for some of these benefits.
That's right.
You know, you mentioned earlier that...
I wonder if I could jump in.
Sure.
We also have a hotline called the Work-Life Law Hotline. I run the Center for Work-Life Law that, along with the wonderful work done by the Employment Law Center, it's a hotline for people who encounter discrimination based on family responsibilities. And we also hear across the country from many people who don't have paid leave, but also need, after all, it doesn't take 3 months to raise a child or 6 weeks. It takes, you know, 20 years. So there's a lot of discrimination, unfortunately, that people encounter based on their family responsibilities. And that's one area of law that we've been very active in developing. In addition, we have a major project with The Gap, the company The Gap, to redesign the schedules of hourly workers. Because lack of leave is a really dramatic problem that affects hourly workers. But in addition, they often have extraordinarily unstable schedules that change from day to day and week to week, which makes it extremely difficult when workers have to arrange childcare, for example, and they don't know what their schedule is going to be except for just a few days' notice. And so there's a lot of companies that are shifting towards more stable schedules. And we're running a major experiment to see what happens when a whole group of hourly workers shift to schedules that are more stable in a whole series of ways.
Thank you, Joan Williams. Julia Parrish, you mentioned a couple of bills that I gather are going through at the state level that you're trying to get support to expand paid and unpaid benefits for families here. Is there anything going on at the federal level? If we pop back out and ask, what are the solutions? You know, at the beginning of the hour, we laid out the stark reality that in the United States, we lag every other developed nation when it comes to maternity and paternity benefits. What's going on? Is there anything going on at the national level to rectify that?
I think that there's the Family Act, which is pending at the national level, which would provide some paid time off to employees who are taking parental leave. And there's some other, the federal government has made steps to offer paid family leave and more flexibility to federal employees. By way of example, the Department of Labor is funding research to look into improving paid family leave policies from the state and at the federal level. But honestly, we're pretty far from making any kind of movement at the federal level. And so as a consequence, what you're seeing is more states enacting these kinds of laws, more localities. The city of San Francisco has passed the Family-Friendly Workplace Ordinance and other ordinances that you're seeing pop up in local jurisdictions to try to fill some of these gaps and move the needle forward.
General Williams, we have just a little bit of time left. Do you have anything to add to that for the last word?
I guess what I have to add is that I think it's really striking now that we have a very competitive labor market for high-tech companies that one of the ways they're competing is on family-friendly policies. And that's really a very heartening development.
Thank you for that. And we'll leave it there. That's City Visions for tonight. Our guests were Joan C. Williams, Distinguished Professor of Law at UC Hastings, Julia Parrish, Staff Attorney at the Legal Aid Society Employment Law Center, and Tom Stocky, Vice President of Search at Facebook. Thanks to all of you for joining us this evening.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
For a link to this and other City Visions episodes, or to let us know what you thought about tonight's show and to subscribe to alerts and download podcasts, visit the City Visions page on kalw.org. Our engineer this evening was David LaTulipe. Tonight's show was produced by Wendy Holcomb and Susie Britton. Join City Vision's regular host, Joseph Pache, next week for a discussion of assisted suicide. This is Raja Shah. Thanks for listening.